Mediocrity Podcast. Talk about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Miggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
And welcome to this amazing special edition of the Mediocrity Podcast. I'm so excited that this podcast is happening right now for many, 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 many reasons. Of course, we are Mediocrity. I'm Brian Kluger. And what makes this special today is that Jonathan Atterbury, Jeremy Maggard, and myself are all in the same room. We're not only in the same room, we're basically touching thighs right now. You hear that? I'm so excited. What's up, guys? It's been a long time.
What's up?
How are y'all?
We're great.
Good. Jeremy's in a Atterbury Kluger sandwich right now. The middle of it.
He is the cream filling.
He is the cream filling. How do you feel about that?
I'm all right with it.
He's all right with it.
I'm secure.
Oh my goodness! I'm so glad to be here. What's going on? You came into town. What is this big occasion that you're in Texas for?
Well, I'm in Texas so I can officiate a very special wedding.
Oh my goodness! Is there going to be stormtroopers at this wedding?
Probably not.
I did not invite the 501st, although now I feel like I should.
Dropping the ball. Yeah.
That would have been
a great surprise for Josie's mom.
Does Josie's mom like the 501st?
I don't even know.
I think she might be really frightened.
Yeah.
Like, kind of call the police.
Yeah. So there's a big wedding this weekend, Mr. Jeremy, with you and your fiance Josie. Are you excited?
Yes, I am.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you got the wedding, you got family coming in town, and then where are you going on your honeymoon?
We're going to Disneyland.
So
that's how Josie would say it. Yeah. Sheer excitement.
So you're going to California?
We are.
Is Atterbury going with you? Because he's going to California too?
No. That's the irony of it all.
Oh my goodness, that's good. Well, I'm excited for you. Excited? Are you nervous? Are you excited?
I'm excited.
You're excited?
Yeah.
My goodness.
I'm excited to officiate my first wedding ever.
Oh, yeah. So are you like an official clergyman now?
I am a minister. I am a legal minister.
Minister of what church?
Of the church of Jonathan.
The church of New American Fitness. That's awesome, man. I'm so excited. Do you have a good speech written?
I'm about 90% of the way done with it.
Okay, good.
I'm leaving some room for improv. We're just going to see how it goes.
All right. So good. I'm excited. I'm excited for you. And it's a special call because when was the last time we actually all three were in the same room recording this? Because when did you move?
Well, let's see. I moved in
December.
Like early December. So it was right around then. Yeah.
It's been almost a year.
Oh, my gosh. There's so many movies that we talked about since then, and so many movies we were wrong about since then.
Speaking of things that you were wrong about, I feel like we should discuss Hellboy.
Wait. What am I wrong about Hellboy for?
You had the classic reaction that everybody else did as soon as they found out that Guillermo del Toro and Ron Perlman were not going to be making the Hellboy movie. You were like, this is the worst thing ever. And you just can't do it. And then that picture comes out for the new Hellboy movie, and you're like, oh my god, this is going to be amazing.
Okay, so first off, let me explain my emotions there. So I love Guillermo del Toro. I love Ron Perlman. I love those Hellboy movies that he did, Hellboy 1 and 2. And then, like, recently, as of, like, maybe 6 months ago, on Twitter, Guillermo del Toro and Ron Perlman like had a meeting with Mike Mignola and the studio execs about doing Hellboy 3. They said it wasn't going to happen. And then like 2 weeks later, another Hellboy movie comes out. So I'm like, what? Why? How? No. And then I saw the picture of David Harbour as Hellboy. I'm like, okay, this looks sweet. There you go.
Everyone likes to be on the bandwagon.
I think we might have talked about this.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Oh, I'm late to the party. But I'd like to mention, which is funny to me, Daniel Dae Kim is going to play the one of what's his name in the Ed Skigren was supposed to play this Asian actor or Asian character in the book, but everybody screamed the whitewash.
Right.
And then he stepped down on his own and they got Daniel Dae Kim. But I think this character is Japanese, but then Daniel Dae Kim is Korean. So I don't understand here. I guess it's just an Asian looking guy. I don't know.
I think that's as close as they could get to it at this point. Whatever.
Well, I just thought, like, do you have any thoughts on that? Because with the whole, like, you're not getting the specific, you know, race right, but then they didn't get it right again.
Well, I don't think many people are upset that Henry Cavill was playing Superman. Or that an American actor portrays a British person, a British character.
Well, that's happened so much recently.
It happens a lot, but I don't think there's a lot of upset over that. So it seems that people are okay as long as the people look like the right ethnicity.
Okay.
It seems like really it just comes down to what you look like.
All right. I was very curious about that because I was like, well, is he Japanese and he's Korean? But the whole thing was... You know,
I think the main thing is they just don't want white people playing other people.
Okay, all right. So we have a white person play Martin Luther King, so it'll be fine.
Yes, it'd be fine if it was Denzel Washington playing that character. You just can't have a white guy doing it.
Okay. All right, so Hellboy. No, the picture looks awesome. Hopefully it's good, but I think what it was is that they announced the new Hellboy so soon after Grimmo and Ron and Mike Mignola and the execs said no. I was like, really? They just said they would.
But I was so we were Jeremy and I were both very excited about it. We were like, R-rated Hellboy, awesome! Let's do it.
I know, which I don't understand. This will be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be all right.
Look at that picture and tell me it'll be fine.
Like, 1 year later, Brian's like, amazing. My new favorite movie. It's better than Evil Dead 2.
That's yet to be determined. Speaking of other movies in the news, they just released the poster, banner, and I think they're probably going to release a trailer sometime today of the new Tomb Raider movie. Have you seen this?
Yes.
Poster?
Yes.
Did everybody notice her neck?
Yeah. Dude, Twitter is aflame with people hating on this poster. Have you seen this?
I saw the poster. What are they hating on?
The neck. The angle of the bad photoshopping of the neck.
So basically it's that, you know, all women who in heroic roles have to, you know, have that image of them with their butt to the camera, them looking over their shoulder like, what's going on?
Yeah, how can we show the butt and the boobs in one shot?
Yes. of course, Alicia Vikander's playing Tomb Raider.
Right, Lara Croft.
But how they did the neck, like somebody described it so well on Twitter. It was something like, her neck looks like John Carpenter's The Thing when you find out it's The Thing immediately. Because it's, like, very long and, like, twisted.
It's just not really right. Bad. Just for whatever reason, it just doesn't look right.
So, it's really funny.
What would really be terrible if that's just the way her neck looks? Wouldn't that really be awful for her? If everyone's like, oh my god, that Photoshop looks hideous. that nobody's neck looks like that. And she's like, I just have a slight deformation, okay guys?
It's not a great poster to begin with.
It's garbage. It's a terrible poster. And it's terrible because the video game covers for the last two Tomb Raider games are fantastic.
Yeah, they're
And
awesome.
They have such good material that they could have pulled from. Instead, they go for this classic or this cliche pose that you see for every action movie.
Yeah, and one of the things that makes the neck look awkward also is the hair, the way it's coming down with the curve of the neck. You know, that makes it even weirder because it like almost makes it look like there's a weird shape.
Like
the neck
as an artist, if you drew that, you would be like, no, I have to start over. Unless you are going for a John Carpenter thing look, like it's about to attack.
Like, how can it make someone look like they've got a really fucking weird neck?
And it's weird, though, because, like, she has, proportionately, like, a very petite body.
Right.
So, if you were to, like, I was trying to draw her, it would be very weird to make it look like it was an accurate, like, if you were to go with, like, a photorealistic drawing style, because of, like, just with the kind of, like, size of her head and, like, the really petite body, You know, it's like they probably did Photoshop it and make her neck look a little bit longer, but because of like the size of her head and her petite body, it looks.
It is. It's so funny. So I guess the trailer will come out today, so hopefully it's really good. I wanted to compare the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider poster because I remember that poster because they focused on her like giant. They did.
Dude, well, it's embarrassing, really, for Hollywood that that's really... Anytime you have a woman and a poster, that's really all they focus on.
I'm honestly really... I was actually expecting them to go that route where her back was actually to the camera specifically mm-hmm. for that reason.
But Alicia doesn't have, like, you know, she's not well endowed in that way, so they could probably... I mean, I would like, you know, I don't know what I would like.
Finger guns?
Finger guns.
that's why. By turning her around and having her back face the camera, you're almost removing that element of, like, the first... Because... They don't want the same thing that happened with Wonder Woman, where Gal Gadot gets cast, and all of a sudden everybody's like screaming because her boobs are too small.
Yeah, but okay, all right. But I just know that every time you see Black Widow on a poster, it's the same pose as this,
right?
As Laura Croft here.
Yep.
So I don't know. I don't know. It's not a good poster.
I hope the movie's better than the poster is going to be.
Well, I feel like you can find 10 exact posters of the 10 exact posters. I
agree
same
completely.
Color scheme with a different title.
I feel like it's probably similar to what we're experiencing with movie soundtracks now, where they have one of those guide tracks that they use, right?
Yes.
For the
yes,
score.
Yes.
And
yes.
And it's the same. Just you're just getting cut and paste. So somebody's like, "Hey, we need a pose for the poster. Do that thing that Black Widow does."
Well, the problem is when you do the posters, though. So much of it is designed by committee because, like, the artist or whoever does it sends it out, right, and it goes to all these people. And then
right.
just one person says, "Okay, well, it needs this," and then another person says, "Okay, well, it needs this," and another person says, "Well, it needs this." So you end up with this poster by committee, where all of a sudden it's like, "Well, we got this. Okay, no, but we really need her turned like a little bit more this way." Like,
right.
That's why, like, you ever watch the Drew Struzan documentary?
Yes.
One of the reasons he stopped doing movie posters was. He had all these people telling him how to paint things that mm-hmm. had no business telling him.
Exactly.
Had no business giving him advice.
Right.
And there's so many posters out nowadays that are literally just the title and just the actor on the face of the actor. There's mm-hmm. really no artisticness in
it's
posters
rare.
Anymore, which sucks because that's what I loved about movie posters back
right.
then, you know, 80s or maybe early 90s, but now... And the last cool movie poster I really liked was Baby Driver. Hand done. I don't know.
Although, just when Jeremy picked me up from the airport, driving back to his house here, I saw a big poster on the side of the freeway for Blade Runner. And I was noticing that it actually looked like a really good poster. Some really nice color schemes and some artistry went into that. It's a good poster.
Yeah, it's good because the original one was good too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Hopefully.
Well, didn't Drew Struzan do the original one?
He might have done.
He did do the original one.
Yeah.
Drew did Star Wars stuff, right?
A shitload of Harrison Ford posters. He did all the Indiana Jones ones.
Mm-hmm. They're all so good.
Yeah.
They are good.
In fact, a lot of, like, the images that, like, the quintessential, like, Indiana Jones images that people think of are actually not from the movie. They're actually.
Go. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, there's that little bit of, we'll see what the trailer looks like. Hopefully for the best, because the recent Tomb Raider games have been amazing.
Yes.
Finally.
Yes.
So hopefully the movie's equally as those.
I hope that they take a cue from Wonder Woman and they realize that they can have a legit good hero without oversexing or making it ridiculous. You know what I mean?
I agree. All right. Well, let's move on. Let's do a Destiny 2 update. Been another week. We've all played many hours. Any new thoughts? Any new complaints?
Well, I think I'm probably the one who has the biggest shift at this point. Now that I've actually been able to level up my character to the point where I've got some decent gear, I'm enjoying the game way more now. Way more. Because when I first started, it was a hard shift to make because I was going from Titanfall 2 primarily to Destiny 2. And Titanfall 2, as Jeremy pointed out, when you start the game, you're given pretty good gear. It's all kind of, you don't really get any guns that are like way better than other guns. They're all kind of balanced. So it feels great when you first start off the game. Whereas Destiny feels horrible. It feels like you're shooting, a paintball gun or something like that. It's terrible. Until you get to a fairly decent level and you get good gear. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, this is a fun shooter now.
Right.
So I'm having a much better time with the game at this point.
I'd have to say that playing, I've noticed a shift in Jeremy's behavior. He likes to stop and take dime. Or telling me to go into certain places. Like, there's a loot box here. There's no loot box there.
Well, you know, technology has progressed and given me that ability.
It is good. It is good. Every time, it's great. but, no, I'm liking it. I guess we beat the game with you again.
Yep.
And, you know, our characters are all fairly almost similar. I mean, Jeremy, yours probably has the best.
Well, Jeremy's in the lead as far as his light level, yeah. And then yours is second. I'm pretty significantly under you guys.
Okay. We'll get there.
I know I'll get there. I'm not sad about it. I'm just saying that that's the reality.
We have the update kicked over today, so we can do some of that right after this show.
Sweet. Yeah, I was very curious about it because since you beat the game and there's more missions, there's more adventures and stuff to do, but it feels like you're going in the same locations. It's kind of doing the same thing, but just like the mission wording is differently. I wonder if they'll add new planets, or did they do that with Destiny 1? Because I played Destiny 1, but not as much as I...
So, what my big fear is with the single-player stuff is the grind. Because I hated that about Destiny 1. Doing all the freaking patrols and random challenges, they all felt too damn similar. Uh-huh. And it drove me insane. Like, I hated doing that kind of stuff. I got to the point where all I had interest in doing on Destiny was the Crucible, the multiplayer aspect, multiplayer matchmaking. And everything else was just like, I'm not doing it because it's annoying. And so I've kind of been reluctant to get back into it with this one, so I can't really say for sure if it's the same kind of grind or what. Jeremy would be able to say better about that.
There probably is a bit of grind with it. I haven't run into it myself yet, but the worlds are way bigger on this one. So I'm sure they are going to add more to it, but so far, like the four or five whatever worlds that we have are significantly larger.
There we go.
So that's kind of a nice thing to with this game so far.
All right. I'm definitely enjoying it. Like I said, since I got the game, I have not played any Overwatch since I got Destiny 2. I tried to play a game of Friday the 13th, but again, problems occurred with their servers and was kicked out.
So, I had the same thing. I tried to play there a night with Lauren and we spent about a half hour just trying to get into a game.
Oh.
Got into the game finally and the host quit. So we got booted. And then we got spent another 15 minutes trying to get into a game and I was playing and it glitched. So I was about to get into the vehicle so I could drive away. And instead it just made my character sit down in the middle of the air. And where Jason and I couldn't run away. I was just stuck sitting down in air, and Jason just grabbed me and killed me. And at that point, I turned it off. I said, "Hell, this game
is enough." And it's funny because you mentioned Titanfall 2. I think we played that for literally maybe an hour and a half total, and then Destiny 2 came out, and we haven't looked back really, or at least I haven't yet.
I may end up going back to Titanfall 2 because I still think Titanfall 2 is an incredibly good shooter. And it feels very different than Destiny.
It does, but it's crazy how, when y'all told me to download it, it was like almost 70 gigs. And where Destiny 2 was like 29 gigs. I'm like,
Titanfall 2 is an unrealistically huge file. It's like, where, yeah, like you said, like, where, why?
Yeah, well, I'm not understanding where all of this is coming from. So I would like to see the file names and like, stuff that we haven't seen yet, or I don't know. Very interesting. And we also haven't played Battlefront in a while.
We have not played Battlefront in a while.
So we need.
But it won't be that long until Battlefront 2 is coming out.
So what's going to happen when Battlefront 2 comes out? We're going to play that and stop Destiny 2?
No.
Why would we do that?
Just, I don't know.
Just split your time up between the two. You don't have to choose one.
A lot of video games.
Only two.
Well, that's a so considering how involved and how much fun we have playing those, and it's fun being a member of the clan and hearing everybody else, you know, talk, and it's cool because you can talk to everybody while everybody's doing different missions, and you can.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I complain about Destiny 2 is that you can only have three people in a squad.
Yes,
that does suck. Because I feel like, what if you have like six people? Just add more enemy, whatever.
Right,
you have to have something in there that like. More
I'm not sure why they have it limited like that.
Was that like on the old Destiny?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, three-person fire teams, except for the raid.
And that's the same thing with this one.
All right. So I think I could do a raid. I think I leveled up enough to do that. But there you go.
We'll get lots of videos of you falling.
Oh my gosh. I remember one of the first times I was playing, I was trying to jump like, you know, it's like 200 feet onto this little ledge. I could not do it. So Jeremy took these videos of me just, yeah, yeah. That was so good.
And then he promptly sent them to me.
Yes, he did. I liked them all. That was so funny. And then that's like, the best one where it worked against them was like, just stand right here and I'll, there's bad guys coming in, but if you stand right here, it won't take as much time. You try to close the door on me to kill me? Mm-hmm. It was good. I liked it. All right, Destiny 2 talk over. I got to talk about the movie I saw last night that's coming out this week. I don't have to get on the first movie. Did y'all like Kingsman movie? Came out a couple years ago with Colin Firth.
Kingsman. I'm not familiar with the movie you're talking about.
The Kingsman?
Yeah.
You see it? Mm-mm. Am I saying it wrong? Kingsman Secret Service?
Who's in it?
Oh my god. Colin Firth.
And?
In the first movie?
Yeah.
What's his name? Eggsy. Have y'all really not seen this?
No, we've both seen it.
Okay, good. Oh my god. I was like, oh my god.
I'm just giving you crap because we've talked about the fact that we've both seen this movie.
Okay.
I think on this podcast.
All right, good. So you like Kingsman?
No.
Wait, you didn't like Kingsman?
I didn't. He did.
You like Kingsman?
Loved it.
How did you not like Kingsman?
I just didn't like it. I thought the humor was retarded.
You were really weird.
It was humor that I felt was just really basic.
It's like silly James Bond, but even
it's
more
not
violent
nothing like James Bond. The humor, the humor is not like James Bond.
Well, it's not a campy like that, but it's still over the top silly.
That's what I didn't like about it.
Oh, I
don't mind silliness, but I just found it to be very dumb.
You are a weird sir.
I know. I like what I like.
No, I like what I like.
There are aspects of that movie that I enjoyed.
I like what you don't like.
I know. There are definitely things about that movie that I really enjoyed. But I'd say when I watched it, when it was over, I was like, that was stupid.
Okay.
That was my first reaction to the movie.
So, okay. You probably hate the sequel.
I might like it. I'm open to liking
We're
it.
We're going on Friday.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Channing Tatum's in it, so that's a good sign for me.
All right. Well, to say something about Channing Tatum in the movie, he probably only has about 5 minutes of screen time.
Okay, that's good.
I mean, his character's in the movie. He has a big part of it, but he's not on the screen.
Well, I figure it gets balanced out. So we've got Channing Tatum, but we've also got Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
So that earns some credit back for me.
And you have Jeff Bridges along with the person who plays the villainess in the role, Julianne Moore.
Right.
And there is a bowling scene, too. So there's like a big Lebowski type of vibe.
Okay. That's good.
But no, so I really liked it. You know, a lot of sequels nowadays, especially with big action movies, I think. Bigger, better, stronger, faster type of thing. There's an element of that in here, but it's like all done very well. My only gripe about it is that it's like 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is very long. I mean, even for this movie.
Did it feel long?
No, actually it didn't. It actually went by fairly fast, but then there's also like 200. It could have easily been 20 to 30 minutes less.
Well, I don't mind. I'm perfectly fine with length in movies. I just want it to, I don't like when it drags.
So it does, Kingsman really doesn't.
So if it doesn't drag, it's cool.
Tons of crazy stuff in it, and it's like the silly over-the-top stuff. I hope you like it. I mean, if you like the last one, you're going to like this one. I really enjoy it.
Well, now, don't get me wrong. I like the over-the-top action aspects.
Okay, you'll like
I like the over-the-top things in that regard. I just found Eggsy to be really annoying, and I didn't like the script, basically.
Okay, so I think if you found Eggsy annoying, I don't think you'll find him as annoying here because, you know, he's not, you know, kind of the thug. So, you know, he's already transitioned, he's
right.
A good guy, you know, that whole thing.
Right.
So, and if you've seen the trailers or not, or the poster, you know that Colin Firth is back,
mm-hmm.
They have a good explanation for it. And
right.
So, there's some excellent cameos in there.
But overall, you liked it?
Oh, I loved it. The music's excellent, like the music they do all the fight scenes to.
That was one of the strengths of the first one,
yeah,
for sure.
This one even tops, because the last one they did was Freebird.
Right, that big church fight scene.
The one they do in this one is even better, trumps it.
Really? And is it better than The Chain and Fleetwood Mac and Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
No, yes it is.
Because
it
that
is.
Was probably the best use of this pop song in a movie I've
no,
ever seen.
You have no idea what you're in for this, for the final climactic fight scene,
mm-hmm.
And who it's with and what song it is, but mm-hmm. It is absolutely perfect, and you'll love it. You're like, oh, Yes.
Nice.
But yeah.
Tiptoe Through the Tulips by.
No, it's not. You'll probably know what it is early in the movie because somebody who's in the movie.
Okay.
But you'll see. But it's fantastic.
Gene Simmons.
But no, it's
the song Beth.
Yeah. Yes. I loved it. It was a fun, over the top, good action film. Just like if you like the first one, you're gonna like the second one. Hopefully, Atterbury, you'll like. What'd you like about the first one, Jeremy?
I just felt like it was kind of a fun version of the Bond movies. I enjoy the current Bond movies, but they are super serious. I feel like they take themselves very serious, and in doing so, the kind of fun of the Bond world kind of got lost for me in those movies, even though I really enjoy them. But they just don't as much oftentimes feel like a James Bond movie. And this feels like James Bond inspired with the fun of the Bond world.
So I agree. I partly agree with that because I think towards the end of Pierce Brosnan's Bond run, I think it got just too campy and hokey.
I agree
with
that.
And I think they need to reboot it with like a darker type of straighter image, but then they kind of stuck with that for most of it. And then, like, I wanted that camp, a little bit of campiness, or maybe a little bit of Kingsman,
right,
to creep back in there.
See, so, I thought Skyfall was the perfect balance.
It was. Skyfall was awesome.
That was because then we got, like, the, you know, M and the wooden lined office, and we got the Aston Martin, and we got Q, and we got a few, even though I don't like the guy they cast as Q, but we did get some of those classic Bond elements. But then they went on to the. Did Spectre, and they went way too far in the other direction, back to campy Bond.
Well, the reason I think a lot of Spectre failed was they relied too much on not revealing who the villain is, anything until the very end.
Right.
Which, like, just say who it is.
But even then, Spectre, I think, was a really bad movie.
Yeah, the only good part of Spectre was, like, that first opening 10 minutes, like, the long one-shot thing.
Right, that was
good.
And
then after that, like...
Yeah, see, that was the thing for me. Like, it got to the end, and then the building fell down, and he landed in the seat, and I'm like... That's not that bad. What's everybody complaining about? And then 10 minutes later, I was like, oh my God. Terrible.
Yeah, I don't know what happened because it was the same crew, same writer, same director as Skyfall.
Yeah. And it was like all the seriousness. That was the thing that didn't work, is it was all the seriousness of the previous Daniel Craig Bond movies. But then you add in these ridiculously things, this ridiculous scenarios and things that felt so out of place. In this movie, it was super campy, and then you've got, you know, Dave Bautista going, "Oh crap," or whatever he says before he gets pulled out of the wall, which is just the worst line ever in any action movie.
That was
movie.
His only line in the movie.
I know
it was his only
but,
line.
Like
in
even
the
Skyfall
movie.
For me though, like I didn't dig Skyfall because you have this guy who's like a hacker, like wait. So, what, like, you're trying to scare people with hackers? Like, what is, like, did you make this Bond movie in, like, the 90s? And you're just bringing it back? Like, why is, you know, and then, I'm sorry, but, like, you know, Javier Bardem's death scene was fucking terrible. You know, the knife in the back, and he turns around, and he's like, ah! I'm like, really? That's the best you got of all the takes of him doing that? That was the best thing you had?
Like, yeah, and let's all agree that it was a huge, and I'm sure it's not their fault because I'm sure he just said no, it was a huge missed opportunity that Sean Connery didn't play the old Scottish guy at the castle. You know what I mean? The guy with the shotgun, hunting rifle. I know he's not coming back, but that would have been amazing. That would have been stand up, a whole audience clapping in the theater.
What I really wanted to have happen, which I feel like would have been a great middle finger to the Bond thing, is... So, you had Arthur die in the first Kingsman. I really wanted you to have Sean Connery in the second Kingsman take over as Arthur. To where he's basically, like, the leader of the little, like, British spy
organization. Oh, that would have been so good.
Because that would have been just such, like, a fantastic, like, double middle finger to, like, the Bond guys.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, I'm doing this over here because this is better.
I wonder if they even reached out to him.
You know what? How could they not? I mean, they're like, we're going to have an old, gray-bearded Scotsman in this Bond movie. Who might fill that role as an actor?
No, it's really, really weird. There is a... You'll see a Kingsman thing happen in the sequel where they reference something.
Mm-hmm.
So fingers crossed.
Unfortunately, for a third one. I don't think he's ever coming out of retirement. He seems to be so over it, all of it at this point.
He didn't understand Lord of the Rings. That's why he didn't accept Gandalf.
But like at this point, though, man, that guy's aged hard.
He's super old.
There was like 20 years where he didn't age, and then like all that aging that he didn't do over like 25 years, he did in like 3 weeks.
That's true. That's very true. It's like Burt Reynolds, I feel like. I feel like Boogie Nights came out not long ago, but he looked good in Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights came out about 20 years ago, man.
So weird to
that, I know it doesn't sound like, it doesn't feel like 20 years ago, but 20 years is a long time to age.
He had a guest appearance on the show Psych, and I was like, and I saw him, I was like, whoa, that's rough. There's some miles on that dude.
Yes, there is. But I think you'll like it, and I read that they've already prepped, or they're prepping for a third sequel to Kingsman.
Right.
And Matt Reeves, the director, has expressed interest in plays the next villain, which is The Rock. Which it seems like his type of movie.
Sure. I'm always happy with The Rock.
That would be great to watch The Rock in a movie like that.
That'll be great.
Just massive, over-the-top
violence. Just be like just rolling G.I. Joe, but the bad guy.
Basically.
Has The Rock been a bad guy yet? Is he a bad guy in Doom? He's a bad guy, right?
Sort of.
Or Scorpion King, I guess. He's kind of the bad guy.
No. He wasn't. Not he was the bad guy in The Mummy, the movie,
but not in the Scorpion King movie. That's right. So it'd be cool to see him as a villain like that.
It would be cool to see him as a villain in such a over-the-top action movie. Because, you know, his role in Fast and the Furious is, like, super, super over-the-top.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But it'd be great to see that flip to where he's the villain.
But the nice thing is you'll get, not only will you get that, but you'll get, like, the rated R violence of Kingsman.
Yeah, exactly. So and we need more rated R Rock violence.
Like,
we do.
Because, and you'll, it'll
him
be,
snapping
it'll
people
it'll
in half.
Graphic violence. Like, think about something like, I mean, I don't know what we got in store for the second one. We'll find out. But, like, think about, like, just, like, the church scene.
Oh, yeah.
Now imagine something like that, but you've got, like, The Rock, who is just excessively good at, you know.
Yeah. You know. Sounds like a wet dream come true.
And now he's like, I'm on board.
You can put The Rock in anything, and I'm pretty much on board for it at that point.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Speaking of The Rock, a little bit of news, or not, it's not really gossip, but how do y'all feel? So, I guess Tyrese, who's in all Fast and the Furious movies, The Rock is, I guess they're making a spin-off movie of The Rock's character from Fast and the Furious. What's his name in that movie?
Hobbs.
Yes. So they're making a spin-off movie of that. So I guess Tyrese got very angry online at The Rock on Twitter. And was like, hey, all these Fast and the Furious work so well because we were all involved. Hopefully you do the Fast and the Furious sequel before you do your own spin-off movie. And so, like, what do you think? Do we want a Hobbs movie? Or, I mean,
sure.
You just said you want The Rock.
Well, let's be honest. The only reason the Fast and the Furious movies survived is because of The Rock.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about franchise Viagra.
Well, because everybody's in Fast and the Furious movies now. Like,
but people stopped caring about them, which is why they put The Rock in there.
Well, I think they finally found their footing in, like, how over the top and ridiculous it is, and they went that route. So
they put The Rock in there because ticket sales were starting to sag for that franchise. Nobody cared anymore.
It's really crazy. Like, one of the top grossing movies ever made has two of the worst actors ever in it, The Rock and Vin Diesel.
Look, you had one movie that basically sold on the sole purpose of you had two guys that signed on to do the movie, do a fight scene together that were not even original characters.
Yeah, you're right.
It's true.
You had The Rock and Jason Statham in a fight scene, and that was the selling point of that entire movie.
Which is so crazy. It made over a billion.
The selling point was to get to watch The Rock, rock bottom, Jason Statham through a coffee table. At Jason Statham's own request.
And it worked.
If you're not in a Rock movie, don't you want to be put through a table by him? I mean, yes, that's what you want. You want to be rock bottom. Please, Mr. Rock. Rock bottom. But do you... With all that being said, do we think we need...
Sure. Let The Rock do whatever he wants to do. That's my theory.
You're on board with that.
My philosophy is just let The Rock do what The Rock wants.
Yep.
Now, I am going to say that I don't for a minute buy the whole drama between Tyrese and him. Because there was a similar bit of drama, allegedly.
With Vin Diesel.
With Vin Diesel in the last Fast. I think this is just their little MO for promoting their new movies and stuff.
So that might be, because I know WWE was in talks about having Vin Diesel and The Rock do something at WrestleMania, but it never came to fruition.
Right, exactly. So maybe they're trying to do the same thing with Tyrese now.
Which is great. Like, Tyrese, really? I will buy Vin Diesel in the ring.
Would you? Would you? Vin Diesel.
He'll come back at WrestleMania, or The Rock will, for sure.
Everybody just wants to wrestle. Doesn't matter who it is.
That's true.
Like... What was the video?
You're here for your person in your photograph up there, Stephen Amell, yeah. Right? He's been in a pay-per-view or two. Absolutely. He was actually really good.
So has our president.
Oh, no, our current president is in the Hall of Fame of WWE.
It's crazy. It's amazing. Just saying that out loud is really crazy.
What was the one event where you had, like, Schwarzenegger was in the ring with Joe Manganiello?
Yes. Oh, that was for that horrible movie. Oh, what was that movie?
Escape Plan?
No. That was Sylvester and Arnold. Arnold and Joe Marshall, they were
really it was the one where he was the drug cartel. Yes, I forget the name of that movie.
There was a third person in that ring, but I don't remember who it was.
Oh, those were the days.
That wasn't that long ago. That was like 5 years ago.
You know, it's like you used to have like Michael Clark Duncan would show up at those things.
I know.
You know?
He was a huge WWE fan. Oh my goodness, he was. He was always there.
Thank goodness for the WWE. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh my goodness. So yes. The Rock. Yes, he's.
We love The Rock. The Rock is
he's
awesome.
Making tons of movies.
End of show.
End. all right. So there's your Fast and the Furious talk. Your Kingsman talk. I hope you like it. I hope to hear from you.
Side note here regarding The Rock. So this year, $7 Productions, which is The Rock's production company, did. Basically managed the production for the Olympia competition, Mr. Olympia, and which is the biggest bodybuilding competition of the year.
Doesn't Arnold do that?
No, Arnold has the Arnold.
Okay.
He has his own competition.
Okay.
And so the Olympia competition is pretty much the biggest name in bodybuilding at this point, the biggest competition. So they put on the show, and The Rock got to announce who the new Mr. Olympia was. And Phil Heath won, and his seventh win in a row for this. At which point, he's tied Arnold now for 7 Olympia trophies won in a row. So I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
And it seems like they did a really good job with the production. It seems to have been a higher level of just showmanship going on there. So I thought that was cool.
I'm good with it. I like The Rock. I'm good.
Yep.
Whatever he's in, I will most likely see.
But, so, you know who Phil Heath is, right,
mm-hmm,
Jeremy?
I do.
Do you know who Phil Heath is, Brian?
Who is Phil Heath?
He's the leading bodybuilder at the moment.
Okay.
Jeremy will pull a picture to show you. But I just thought, I think it's amazing that we've got one bodybuilder that for 7 years in a row now has gone home with the trophy. I don't even think Arnold won 7 years in a row consecutively. I know he took some time off and then came back and won a couple more times. See, I don't know. And I mean, while Phil Heath looks incredible, I find it hard to believe that in 7 years, you can't find anyone that looks better.
So some bike rider won a big 7 years in a row, but it turns out he had health, right?
Right.
Anything going on?
Oh, dude. Yeah.
All the bodybuilders are on steroids.
That's the thing.
So there's no...
It's a known fact. It's not against the rules.
How is that?
It's against the rules to be caught with it in your bloodstream. So here's the thing, though. It's pretty much a well-known fact at this point that anyone in any top-tier level of any sport is on steroids or some kind of performance-enhancing drug.
Right.
Whether it's bodybuilding, powerlifting, strongman competition, whether it's NFL, NBA, baseball, you know, all the or Olympic sports of any kind, Olympic biking, everybody does it. It's just a matter of do you get caught?
Yeah.
In fact, there was a documentary that they had on Netflix recently, and it was this guy basically
called
Icarus. Yeah, called Icarus, and it was a guy starting about how did. Lance Armstrong get caught doing this basically. And then he's like, okay, I want to
so many years after the fact.
I want to hire somebody that will be able to get me on performance-enhancing drugs, and then be able to pass drug tests.
He's an amateur bicyclist who's always loved bicycling, and Lance Armstrong was his hero. And he's basically, was like early
40s? Yeah, early 40s, I'd say.
But he's a documentary filmmaker, and so what he wanted to do was, he was like, well, how good would I be if I took steroids? And so we basically hired someone, we put him on a steroid regimen. They still test the amateur guys.
Yeah.
So he doesn't get caught, because his thing is that, like, he was in excellent shape, but he was always sitting in this, like, certain spot in the pack that he could never get ahead of these certain dudes. And so he was like, well, I'm gonna make a documentary of me gaming the system and see how it works and see if I can not get caught.
Wow.
Yep. And there's a great documentary that may also still be on Netflix called Bigger, Faster, Stronger.
Bigger, Faster, Stronger. I think that one's still
in
there.
And that one's a fantastic documentary that also talks about this subject, where it's pretty much that everybody at top-level sports is using performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
All right. And honestly, man, almost all the dudes in the superhero movies.
Oh, like all the actors?
Yeah, definitely.
The majority of them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Like if you see, like, an actor you love, and, you know, over the course of like 4 months, he gained like 30 pounds of muscle and he shredded.
So that's steroids. Because there's the fact of this is that it's physically impossible to gain 30 pounds of muscle in 4 months.
So when what's his name? Christian Bale says he did chocolate milkshakes and donuts to beef up from his real skinny roles.
I believe it, but he's not saying that he was also on testosterone and this
he
and
was
that.
Having chocolate milk and donuts along with the steroids.
Yeah. All right.
So that's a good thing to know, because it's really hard to see all this. You know, when those of us normal guys look at what Henry Cavill did in such a short amount of time to get ready for the Superman role or something like that, then we go ahead and try to replicate those same results, and we go, oh, I feel so bad about myself because I just can't look like that. Well, it's because you're not on steroids.
Yeah.
And that's – you got to have realistic expectations, you know?
I should be Superman. Just no steroids. Just.
Well, you do have to go to the gym.
I'll look at one while I drive by.
That's my workout. Well, interesting. Because, I mean, you bring that up because I just posted my review of the 4K Wonder Woman disc. Mm-hmm. And I reviewed every extra on there. It's highly recommended. That disc is awesome. Tons of extras, but there's a specific, like, 10-minute extra bonus feature that shows all the women, supposed to be all the Amazons, training for this. And it looks insane, like, all, like, the crazy stuff they did to train for their roles as an Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if they took stuff like that, too, or...
It depends. I think that there were some women that were portraying Amazons in that movie that were top level CrossFit athletes and stuff like that.
CrossFit athletes and UFC people. Yeah. They mentioned
those
that.
People probably, if not currently, have done some cycles of steroids throughout their career.
Okay.
If you see anyone top level CrossFit, almost all of those people are juicing in one way or another.
Well, I can't imagine doing all those strenuous workouts without.
You can do it now. You can do these workouts, and you can do pretty much all of these same things. You just don't get those results.
Right.
You just don't end up looking like that.
Well, would you over time, or is it just a faster way to do it?
Basically, what steroids do is they raise the ceiling and speed up the process.
Okay, so as something that might take 3 months might take 8 months to do.
So let me put it this way: if you get on a good steroid regimen, you could realistically put on 20 pounds of muscle in a month. And as a beginner, your first year, at most, in a year of bodybuilding, intense, if you did everything right, maybe you gained 10-12 pounds.
All right. So, I mean, coming from me, who watches WWE religiously, and all this, you know, and you hear all the sports, a lot of these sporting agents in WWE are definitely against it for a reason. So, with you or y'all being very, you know, fitness conscious.
Well,
the
wrestling guys say they're against it, but they're not against it.
No.
Even, like, when you look at, like, when you watch the videos of, like, Vince McMahon, like, wrestling, when he was, like, wearing, like, a tank top.
Oh, well, like, back then, they are now. Like, they suspend people for months on end for being tested.
They suspend people for getting caught.
And they spend, it's like the people that got caught and sued for using Napster. Nobody knows anyone that happened to. They just picked a few random people and made examples of them.
That sucks.
It's just like Mark McGuire or other people like that, where everyone was doing it. Just like Lance Armstrong, where everyone's doing it. And they're just like, we're going to make an example out of you to make it look like we care about this.
Well, part of that, I think, to those of us listening, this is so much fun. I think we're just having a good conversation. We haven't talked about this yet, but I like this. Because it involves entertainment, too. Like you said, the actors use it. But something as along the lines of what'd you say?
About what?
Just what we were, I was
about I said Mark McGuire and like Sammy baseball. Sosa and those
so
guys.
So they picked those guys up because Mark McGuire was at the top of his game. And
right.
And Armstrong was at the top of his game too, so they probably like look into him. No.
Well, that's why they named this documentary Icarus. Because you get a little too close to the sun and suddenly, you know, those wings start melting.
The guy that he gets hooked up with is a dude who was, hilariously, he works for the Russian Olympic team. Now, what his job with the team was he was supposed to be the guy that, like, tested the doping. What he was the guy for was how to do the doping and not get caught. And that was basically what his job for the Russian government was.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
So with all that being said, is it, like, your opinion, is it okay to use? Is it done? Like, is it good for certain people to use if they want to get that way? Or?
Well, I think that it's a sad reality that if you want to compete top-level anything, you're going to have to do that.
Right.
Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because that's kind of what is expected. Now, if you're a guy like... if you get cast as the newest Marvel superhero and you want to get lean and muscular and look amazing for your role, they do it in a really smart way. These guys get doctor supervised. They have blood tests. They do it in every way you can do it that's right, that's safe.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's a moral question of whether that's right or not. Because the problem is that you are... creating unrealistic, you know, they always talk about unrealistic body images for women.
Yeah.
But guys are sitting there looking at Chris Hemsworth take his shirt off, and the news is telling us Chris Hemsworth did this in 4 months of hard working out.
Yeah.
And we're just like, ah, why do I look like a pile of mud?
Well, some journalists have actually done, like, The Rock's workout.
Right.
Like, and people are like, oh my God, he 10,000 calories
right.
a day.
And all works. That happens is you get fat if you do that.
Exactly.
As a normal
person. Or this guy, like, puked within the first, like, 6 hours, basically.
Well, the problem is also is that those people start from not working out at all to jumping into the program of somebody who's extremely advanced.
And who's been lifting weights. So, like, The Rock's been lifting weights since he was in high school.
And there's muscular adaptation that needs to happen.
Yeah, at this point, he's been lifting weights experienced for 30 years.
Exactly.
And
no one
can go from not lifting... lifting in that
you got to start with beginner program and then do an intermediate and then you work your way up over years to get your body to handle more and more.
Like a bodybuilder, like if tomorrow somebody's going to start bodybuilding and they were to get like an official trainer, there would be a basic bodybuilding workout that they would be put on for 2 years.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
For 2 years. And like when you saw that picture of Phil Heath, like those guys train for 10 years before they even get close to that.
So if you've ever seen Phil Heath, look him up. Google image search him. Holy
he
God.
Makes Arnold Schwarzenegger at his prime look very small.
Yeah, no, it's although it's like
it's inhuman looking.
Yeah,
it does not look normal.
Yeah.
It does at
and
all.
You like you see his veins and these muscles, and you're like, how? I mean, yes. Is that what required? Is that healthy or is that unhealthy?
No, it's actually not healthy. See, so when you see guys like Phil Heath step on stage, they're at such a low body fat percentage that it's dangerous to run at that level of body fat, because you're very basically you die once you get to like 1% body fat.
Okay.
Because your body needs a certain amount of fat to run
right. In
an optimal way. When these guys get ready to compete, their hormones get crashed through the floor. Their hearts start misbehaving. They will all of them will tell you that they feel horrible for a week leading up to the competition, and then for a week or two after. Because you're basically bringing your body almost to the brink of death so you can look like a superhero.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
And so, like, and when you see those guys, like, in the movies, so like, when you see, for example, like, Hugh Jackman is super shredded as Wolverine, he only looks like that for, like, that one day. Or
exactly.
Like a week, and that's it. And then as soon as, like, they're done shooting that, he's back on a program that is healthy.
Yeah, because what he's basically doing is he's doing a, you know, this certain workout program and a certain diet. But what you see in, like, the role in The Wolverine, where he takes his shirt off, and the famous pose that was just like everyone's like, oh my god, he's so shredded and amazing.
Yeah.
That's a lot of water manipulation.
Yeah.
That's like he was drinking gallons of water for weeks leading up to that, a day, and then next thing you know, he's drinking no water, and then he drinks a bunch of water again, and just pees everything out, and he's super, there's just no fluff on him whatsoever. So even if you'd looked at him 3 days before that, he wouldn't have looked anything like that.
Dude, I love this segment. Awesome. Like,
Chris Pratt, when you look at him in the Guardians movies, is an interesting balance because, you know, he's probably not getting below like about a, probably a 15% body fat.
Oh, I'd say he's lower than 15. I'd say he's probably 10 or 12. Yeah,
he's not huge. I mean, because he was a bigger guy on Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people were, I mean, they all like, oh, he's so hot.
But right.
We love, you know, fatter Andy Dwyer.
Right, right.
On Parks and Rec. But now he's like, he looks healthier.
Uh-huh.
But now you say all this, I'm like, oh, is there a point? But he doesn't look like he's like going crazy.
Exactly. Well, here's the thing. There is a health, like the ideal health-wise body fat range for a male is between 10 and 12%. That's body fat for the ideal health of your average guy.
I think I'm 40%, maybe more.
Well, that's what it is. Is it just for everything you get much lower than that? Like what Hugh Jackman was in The Wolverine, he was probably at 6%. He was really, really lean. And that's not really healthy. You don't want to roll like that for a long time at all. You do that for
a little bit to
do a photo shoot or to do a competition or a movie, whatever, and then you bounce back to 10 or 12% or above.
And there's always a lot of like misinformation because you'll see where somebody will like you'll an article where it's like Ryan Reynolds gets down to 0.5% of body fat.
Yeah, and they're like no
movie, and it's like
he's
man,
like 10%.
Yeah.
Like, he would be dead.
Exactly. So, and it's very interesting just to see what's going on. But, you know, regarding the Wonder Woman thing, I'm sure that some of those women have done performance-enhancing drugs.
Okay.
I don't think Gal Gadot did anything because she's not in any way big in that movie. There's no real musculature to her body.
Right. Okay.
She's pretty much just a woman who had an average, you know, a pretty good physique, and then she got lean. That's what happened. You know, she's not like coming in super jacked or anything like that, you know?
Okay. All right. That was an awesome segment. I love that. That was cool. We need to do more stuff like that.
I will be glad to discuss that stuff anytime.
Sweet. All right. Let's move on to our main event of Brian, myself, versus these two jokers, Jonathan and Jeremy. On two specific movies, which we have very opposing views. Two, they are Alien Covenant and Jurassic World. Which one do y'all want to start out with?
Oh, let's just go with alphabetical order and start with Alien Covenant.
Okay, Alien Covenant came out this year. I enjoyed the movie. I'm not going to say it was the best movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good Alien movie. I liked it. I've seen it a few times. I enjoy it. You guys seem to hate it. Why?
You mean you want a better answer than because it sucked?
Well, so it sucked. I loved it. It was awesome. Or I won't say it was awesome. It was great.
I think I'll explain why I didn't like it. I didn't like it because I actually love Prometheus. I know that was an unpopular movie.
And I feel like this built on Prometheus.
I disagree. I think that this went backwards. I think Prometheus was a step forward in the intelligence of the film, in the intelligence of the plot, the script, everything, the characters. It was a much smarter movie than what we've seen from Aliens in a long time. So we got Prometheus, and it was really great. I loved it. And then here comes Alien Covenant, and I was like, yeah, I'm awesome. I'm ready for more of this action and more of this intelligence. And I feel like they really dialed back the intelligence because Prometheus basically did poorly because it was too smart for the average dumb person. So I feel like the average dumb person was like, I don't get it. I want more alien stuff. And then they were like, okay, cool. Let's just make a movie that's better suited for the average dumb person. And I feel that's exactly what they did with Alien Covenant. That sums it up nicely. I feel like it was a dumb movie for dumb people. But I'm glad you liked it.
I'm glad you had fun there, big guy.
Oh boy.
It was... idiotic. It really was. Everything about it was just really dumb.
All right. I don't agree.
Okay, so we'll do opposing viewpoints. So John went. Now why don't you go with why it was good, and then I will okay. I'll snipe you after that. I will blow up the canisters around you and kill you, falling to your death.
It's not the first time. It happened the other day on the video game. Justin. All right, so what you said, Mr. Atterbury. I believe that Alien Covenant built on Prometheus. I enjoyed Prometheus, so I got Prometheus. I enjoyed it. I agree. I thought that it was the start of this whole universe. I think we got where it all came from, or at least a glimpse of it. So Prometheus was there, and then I think Alien Covenant actually showed us, like, hey, these are why some of the events occurred in Prometheus, and this is what's happened after that, with the aftermath of Prometheus happened in Alien Covenant. I think since there was such a big outrage on, like, there's no alien, there's no monsters, there's no people getting bloodied up in Prometheus, they added that aspect in to appease pretty much both sides of it, which I like. I mean, there was, like, a Friday the 13th scene in Alien Covenant, which I laughed and applauded at. Like, in the theater, I was giddy as hell, like, oh, God, this is ridiculous. Oh, this is awesome. This is fun. Shower scene. Blood. Awesome. Like, I loved it. But I also love, like, the dual side of both the droids.
David.
And I'm trying to remember. But he was awesome in that movie. I think he was the best character. Those two guys. Fassbender's
always good.
He is. But I like seeing, like, how that the alien spores, different alien spores, affect things differently. Like, the plants and the vegetation and that life. And then you had, like, those big white aliens, and actually they seemed almost good that you could communicate with them, because it was a different, like, breed. But then there was the bad, like, the one that we saw at the end that we've seen in the original Alien movies. I like seeing that, and I think they told that very well. It was shot perfectly. It looked good. I didn't like the Ripley ripoff. But I just don't like that actress. I didn't think she was good and fantastic.
But it wasn't just the actress, the character was...
Well, the character is one of the biggest gripes. But at least all the characters that survived were my favorites. But all the characters, they're going to die, you didn't get any time with them.
But that was the problem, is all the characters were so one-dimensional. Because they just didn't... You don't have any time with them. When they're all dying, it just doesn't matter.
Right, no, it doesn't. Because I guess... I mean, in the original Alien movies, you only basically have Ripley through all of them, minus maybe one, maybe two characters that kind of are in all of them, sort of. But everybody else dies in all of the movies, so I'm not too connected to any certain one in any movie, because they're all going to die in my...
But the death still feels significant. That was what I didn't like about... One of the things I didn't like about Covenant is... It's this thing that happens so often in movies nowadays, where when one of the characters dies, it's just like, okay, yeah, I don't feel horror, I don't feel stress or anything.
And on another sci-fi note, that was my biggest problem with the Rogue One movie, is everyone died. I didn't care.
That was exactly the same
the
here.
The only one I cared about dying was the droid, who's not even alive to begin with.
Well, I'll tell you why, because of that in Rogue One, if we can do a side tangent on that.
Always side tangent Star Wars.
K2SO was the only really relatable person or machine in that whole movie, because everybody else was just, like, very bland and otherwise annoying. K2SO actually had, like, a human side of hilarity to him.
Right.
He, like, liked him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was sad when, you know, I went with the Force is with me when he died, just because the character I felt with him, but... Other than that, they're just, like, bland characters, and I felt like with Alien Covenant, a lot of them were bland characters, minus, you know, Danny McBride or whatever, and, of course, Michael Fassbender. But I don't. I totally agree with that, but I think K2SO, it was so horrible. But, again, in that whole big team of things, we're all thinking about Luke and Han and Leia, and we know this happened just for that to happen, basically, so... We all knew what was going to happen, basically.
But it still needed to be
You still needed
better.
To care.
You needed to care. Because they could have had a whole cast of K2s.
Yeah, and they needed to... The characters needed to be more human-like, I think.
Exactly.
Because what was so-
and better acting. That was the big problem, is all these actors in the movie stunk.
Which movie are you talking about?
Rogue One.
Okay.
So, well, so which is interesting, because I think even...
Except Donnie Yen.
Oh, Donnie Yen, he's so amazing. But I think with, like, the young Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford, they were funny, or they were... Even like,
they had charisma. They had charisma, and that's what was lacking.
And they had charisma together.
Yeah, they had synchro... Like, what's the word I'm looking for? That they just worked, like you said, they worked very well together.
Like Luke was whiny, you know. Han's grumpy.
Leia's
and like, it just offsets almost like the super grumpiness and the super whininess almost together for some reason when it's like, it should be annoying. It's not.
Yeah.
But the whiny thing, he also had a childlike sense. Like, he was excited about everything. Like, I want to go do this right now. Yeah. I want to go. This thing is so cool. I'm so frustrated. So, yeah, I get it. But with Rogue One and with Alien Covenant, that was one of the downfalls that everybody kind of seemed bland. Minus Danny McBride, because how could Danny McBride...
I thought he was terrible. I don't like him in anything, and I really didn't like him in this
movie. Danny McBride and Bill Murray, what's wrong with you?
He felt so out of place in this movie.
What's wrong with you?
I like Danny McBride. Him being in that movie is distracting.
It is. It was so out of place.
Because I just like, I'm watching this, and all I can think about is everything. I'm watching Eastbound and Down. I'm watching like Vice Principals, and I'm just like, why is he here? Just like when you had the cameo with James Franco, I'm like, why did you choose James Franco?
Because
now I'm sitting here watching, being like, and I'm sitting like actively wondering why I'm watching the movie, being like, why is James Franco in this part? Like, it's so distracting that you stop in the middle of the movie and you're like, why is James Franco in this? I mean, the entire time you're half wondering, why is Danny McBride in this? And I like Danny McBride. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he's one of the only two people that's still alive.
Because he's one of the characters that you identify with, because he's fun as a cowboy hat. He's like, he's a fun guy.
He's the same character he is in everything.
And he's different.
No.
He's a vice principal.
You're like, it's like, what was the, like, the kind of, like, the horror, pseudo-horror movie that, like, that Joss Whedon did?
Oh, Cabin in the Woods?
Cabin in the Woods.
So
where, like,
good.
You kill off everyone that you think's gonna die just to make it, like, funny and different, and it's kind of like a spoof.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, this is the Cabin in the Woods ending where the wrong people are still alive.
So true. No, it is. It very much is. But I think Alien Covenant was well made. It looks amazing. I thought some of the characters were good, but I thought the storyline progressed, and it was fun. It was equal, like, you know, a smart film as far as, like, what happened with Prometheus and how they're furthering this prequel and how they get to Alien. And I also love that we got, like, these different types of aliens and how this, you know, these spores really affect with whatever type of organism they're in. And I like that they explored that. I loved it. Especially that opening scene with Wayland, you know, that futuristic setting with, oh, that looks so cool. I will say
it was a beautiful movie. It okay. looked good, no, and the special effects were fantastic.
I think you need to give it a second shot.
I don't agree.
I think you need to.
Let's hear Jeremy's opinion.
All right. We're going to talk about, so smart movie. What makes a smart movie? I don't know, but I'm going to tell you this is not it. the initial scene with Wayland and David's awakening was really cool. All right, so your next scene, you have Walter, right, on the ship with Mother, the computer. Everyone's asleep. Mother, right, sophisticated computer program, you would say, piloting this ship. But Mother needs David, needs Walter, right? All these things can't happen. This fancy computer needs this other robot to come press buttons to do things.
I don't know, maybe...
No, watch this. Here's my example. I'm on a roll. So, and I'm fine with that if you want to have Walter walk around and monitor people's life signs. To power everything, Mother requires Walter to come press a button to release your fancy solar sails, right? So while that's doing and it's charging, right, Walter's on the other end of the giant ship doing stuff, then what happens? You have your neutrino wave, is that what it was called?
Okay.
So, your emergency neutrino wave comes. What does Mother do? Mother says, hey, President Screw, I need you to run to the other end of the ship, because if you walk, the movie will be over, to retract the sails, because it's an emergency. So your super sophisticated computer, in the case of an emergency, because you want to evolve the plot, because you need to stall the ship, can't do it itself. And that is bad writing.
I'm very happy that we got Alien Covenant and Spaceballs in the same thing. That was so good.
Because that's what it is. If you're going to have something like that that can't be, that should have been easily taken into consideration, that to me is bad writing, and that is the problem with that movie. That movie, to me, everything is designed fantastically. Everything looks amazing. Some of the casting is weird, but I don't actually have a problem with any of the performances. I think all of the performances are great. My problem is that you have a movie full of characters that are doctors, scientists, and soldiers, and they're all supposed to be the best of the best and super smart, and they do one stupid thing after another just to advance the plot.
Okay, so two things with that. A, yes, to advance the plot, because if they did everything right, we didn't have no movie. But in the interest of that, I think in real life, people will make insane decisions based on their environment. And when people start throwing up blood with them and explode and all sorts of stuff, and just everything goes wrong within a matter of like literally 10 minutes, people are going to overreact and not do things.
Let me put a little asterisk there. Average people will react stupid. The best of the best, if you take a highly trained Marine and put him in a situation under which he's in gunfire,
right,
he will react like a highly trained Marine. He won't just go, ah!
No, right. With Marines,
and
yes,
a highly trained Marine is not going to abandon a post to go sit and smoke a cigarette, and one of your other highly trained Marines is not going to take his face and stick it right in the middle. And on top of that, all of these brilliant scientists are not going to walk out onto an alien world with no air filtration.
Right,
because you don't know what's in the air.
Exactly. So there is that. So,
there is the fact that it's all stupid.
Yeah.
No, it's not all stupid. It's part of like, okay, how long is this movie going to be? Or, you know, like...
Clever writing can always handle these problems.
But I think those are minor gripes.
I'm only 15 minutes into the movie. Right. We can get into, like, the terribleness of the xenomorph birth from Dr. Manhattan's chest, right? And the little baby alien is like, "Yeah,
I am golden god."
And then why does it do that? Like, David's not its dad, or, you know, it's like, it's not like it's like, "Yeah." You know,
the David's, alien would David's recognize like, that it's not a life
David's
form.
Like, and the little alien's like, "Yeah." Why?
I'm really
that
sad
happen?
That the audience can't see
like,
this.
Why does it not just run away? Why does it? I mean, it attacks everything else. Why would it not attack David? Why is when David gets to the planet right before he drops the thing and kills everyone, which by the way looked awesome,
it
right?
Looked cool.
David opens it and he's got white hair. Why is his hair white?
I don't know.
He's a robot. Why does David's hair grow? But Walter's doesn't grow. How does David's hair change colors? When he magically cuts it, and all of a sudden his hair is the same color as Walter's?
Could be.
Like, these are all things that when you watch it, it stops you in the middle, and you're like, well, I don't understand why is this happening. And if your movie stops someone, if your any storytelling thing stops someone, and they're like, wait, why is this? That many times, it's like, what the fuck? I'm sorry, but and Prometheus is the same way. I'm even going to say the first Alien movie has those moments. The guy's helmet is smashed open. There's an alien thing on his face. Don't bring him back to the ship. you don't bring me back to the ship.
Yeah, but...
You leave me on the planet with some stickers and a six-pack of Dr. Pepper and some Star Wars Blu-rays in case it falls off.
Good luck, buddy.
But I'm sorry. I'm not bringing you back. I'm like, well, Kluger, I'm going to leave you... some Army of Darkness.
A bottle of lube.
I'm going to leave you Evil Dead.
And a chicken.
And a chicken. And some gefilte fish. Oh,
my goodness. No, I get your point, but I feel I I don't know. I guess from a writing standpoint, it just... I get all the gripes, because I think those are gripes, and I think, like, I catch that stuff, some of that stuff in movies, too. I try to focus on the big picture of it all, and, like, sometimes it does get away from them, like, instances. But the thing, I guess when you have the best of the best, but when you're in that situation, I guess, I mean, you just might make judgment calls that are not the best. Everything's happening. I gotta go over here. Like, I feel like they wouldn't smoke a cigarette. I think that was just for the character to die. Just like, oh, I'm gonna do this. And
I know, but like, that's the thing that you need to write. Don't write it like, well, we need a way for him to die. Well, what does he do? He goes and smokes a cigarette, steps on this stuff, and then it goes in his ear.
that's how fast.
That's how long that took.
No, absolutely. Because I mean, I guess with a, you know, with, I guess, better writing with that, I would take longer to get to that step, whereas it literally happened in 10 minutes.
Right.
So, and it furthered the plot.
Exactly. I feel like all of us here are writers and creators. So all of us know that when we're going in to create a scene, we think about this. And we were like, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm like, what? How is this going to happen realistically? I don't want my character to be a total moron. So how does this happen in a realistic way where I could actually imagine myself making that same mistake?
Like, there is one scenario for the next movie that I will be okay with happening. If everything that has happened with the two previous movies, there's one acceptable outcome, and that is if David is on his way to the Predator homeworld with a ship army full of xenomorphs. That is the only acceptable next step for me in this plot, based on how fucking stupid that movie is. He better be going to the Predator homeworld, because he's got like 2,000 people on that ship. He's got his little baby, the little baby face huggers. You know, he's got, and Danny McBride can lead them. I don't care. That's fine. Now I'm on board with Danny McBride leading a Xeno. You know,
the only way this works for Jeremy is
Danny McBride's head on a xenomorph, and I'll be okay with it based on everything that happened in that movie.
Okay, so you have to go with the Predator vs. Alien timeline in this one, because these are prequels, and it is said that Ridley Scott's already stated that this the third Alien Covenant Part 2 is going to be the third and final prequel, which actually leads up into the Alien movie. So I don't know where the Predator Alien timeline is, or the Alien vs. Predator. I don't know if they far future from all the movies or not, but I mean, to be honest, the nerd geek in me would love to see Predator in an Alien Covenant. My God, who wouldn't? But I
it would all of a sudden be way more logical.
Yep.
I mean, how in Alien Covenant 2, if we don't see like a younger Sigourney Weaver looking Sigourney Weaver, like actual Sigourney Weaver in there? I mean, how are you not going to immediately like, this is awesome?
I
didn't you pretty much get that in Alien Covenant 1?
Well, I mean, you get like the little alien coming out.
You had imitations.
Yep.
Oh, in Alien Covenant, yes, you did, but she's not Ripley. Everybody wants Ripley.
But why would it be? I don't think you can have Ripley in that in any way. Otherwise, the whole surprise of Alien wouldn't make any sense.
No, but like, let's say like they reference like her ship.
Oh, well, they can talk about the Nostradamus.
Like that. Or like even like they did in Rogue One, like where you kind of see that.
Yeah, we might get a little cutscene or something like that, but I don't think she's going to be a player.
Oh, no, not in the whole movie, but like Princess Leia at the very end, like there might be like something.
I just hope that Ridley Scott doesn't write this next movie.
Well, he's directing it, for sure. But I don't know if he'll write
it. The Neil Blomkamp Alien stuff got shelved.
Which sucks. Yep. Now you understand my frustration with Guillermo del Toro and Hellboy. It got put off and we got another one.
But Guillermo del Toro has clearly demonstrated that he's lost his mojo lately. It has become abundantly clear
his
that he's forgotten how to make good movies.
His new movie, The Shape of Water, is supposed to be amazing.
Nobody's seen it yet.
I thought people
are saying that it's just. I don't think we've been getting real reviews. I think people are just saying it. Look, the trailer came out.
I think it premiered at a festival. And
really?
It might have won like the
okay.
Jury
if that's the case,
like
then I'm wrong. But I thought it was just people are.
It looks like BioShock with Abe Sapien and a love story.
Yes,
yeah,
it does. Yes.
It looks like it could be cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope it's good.
All right. Alien Covenant. We don't know who was right or who was wrong.
Yes, we do. Know we know Brian's wrong.
Yeah, we know I'm wrong. All right. Let's move on to our next one, which is Jurassic World. So, I like Jurassic World. I did. Why did you not like Jurassic World?
Let's let me... I'll go last this time.
Okay, okay. So, Jeremy goes first, I guess.
My problem with Jurassic World is a lot like my problem with the Alien movie. It's not that it was bad cast. I don't have a problem with any of the casting. I don't have a problem. I mean, the performances were going to be of a higher quality in an Alien movie than a Jurassic Park movie anyway. So, and I'll be realistic. Let's be. I can forgive a lot. I'll watch the prequels of Star Wars and enjoy them. So,
enough said.
I'm willing to let a lot go in a movie. I'm just throwing that out there as a qualifier for everything we're talking about right now.
Me too. I just draw the line at the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. That's where I draw the line. I can't enjoy that movie.
Yeah,
but we'll continue.
So, you know, I don't even hold Jurassic Park to a high quality standard of acting. The kind of like the predictability and just it's just the same thing. It's just one bad writing kind of thing after another.
Yeah.
You know, it's even if you take aside from the things of like the shot of the running in high heels, it's
ridiculous. I mean, I noticed that. I'm like, there's no way, but like it's silly.
It's things like, you know, when Chris Pratt's going to go out in the jungle and look for the kids, and she's insisting that she's going to go into the jungle, so she just ties the shirt off, and he's like, okay, there's no way he wouldn't let her go in the there. You know, he's not go like, but they just had to find a way to advance the plot. It's just more of like ridiculousness just for the sake of advancing plot, and in the genericness of the like, oh man, the T-Rex isn't big and scary enough anymore, so we need to make the Uber dinosaur, the one that does all the things of all the other dinosaurs.
There's a reason for that.
No, I know that, but okay. It's still stupid. So that dinosaur, when you watch Avatar, right, and they're mining unobtainium,
which that's is fucking laughable.
That's laughable. This dinosaur is the unobtainium of Jurassic Park.
It is ridiculous. But it's fun, and I like it. All right. Me. Okay, I like Jurassic World. I do. I like Jurassic World. I was real excited because Jurassic Park 1, of course, you know, I think is one of the better movies. Like, it's just...
It's fantastic. I think we can all agree with that.
Jurassic Park 2, half of it is equally good. Up until they go to the States... It was good.
In the King Kong moment?
Yes. Oh, so bad. And then Jurassic Park 3 was terrible.
But still better than Jurassic World.
No, it's not. Jurassic World's actually very good and fun in a lot of ways. I like Jurassic World, and I think it's a good movie because it's entertaining. It's very thrilling. You get a lot of throwbacks or winks to the other movies, such as, like, you know, the dinosaur coming down on, like, the little... on the Explorer, as he did in Jurassic World, on like that little futuristic mine car or whatever, the glass. I like seeing that. I thought Chris Pratt was fun. I thought it was cool that they made the Velociraptors good guys, basically, and like dogs, which is funny, ridiculous, whatever. And I also like the big crazy dinosaur, which I guess is like, this is what happens when you have so much power in a company that it wants the, like we discussed earlier, bigger, stronger, faster dinosaur on steroids, and this is the product of that. Like, this is all of human's creation's gone bad right here. Roll, of course, get out. Do all that, and you have to have the original dinosaur's help. Like, T-Rex saved the day in the original. And he saved the day, basically, here. Mm-hmm. And it was hilarious, which was such a campy-ass moment when the Velociraptor and the T-Rex beat the big dinosaur, and they both tipped their hats to each other.
Right.
And went on their separate ways and did, like, a bow. I laughed out loud in the theater. I'm like, oh, that was amazing. They actually did, like, a tip-the-hat thing to each other, these dinosaurs. See you next time, sir. I thought that was really cool. I liked that we got to see Jaws in the movie, and I specifically loved the actual, finally someone showed how awful it was to be eaten by a dinosaur like that with the bird dinosaur that attacked the woman that would not let her go and then got swallowed by the giant one in the pool.
Right.
That scene, oh my God, was amazing. That's like, that could be my like they need brutality like that in movies like this, like violent as that or could be. Because that was I haven't seen that in a while. Like, do you remember that scene where the babysitter just like got picked up and then dropped and picked up again and then eaten by it was insane. So I love that they did that. And that's, I guess, in a way I like that. Yes, were there problems with it? Yes, was it silly? But I think that it has to be a little silly. I don't think it needs to be like as serious all the time. Yes, they could have done without the running in the heels. Yes, I mean, some of the stupid things with tying the thing. I guess that's like women empowerment, I guess. I don't know. They were trying to do like, oh, they can go.
I have to say right now that this movie was setting women empowerment back a good 30 years.
Well, because she's kind of the villain in the beginning.
But she was also a helpless moron in the entire movie. It was like a bad Bond female character.
Right, yeah.
That's one of the things that I watched and I was rolling my eyes so hard through the entire movie.
Because she couldn't take care of her two nephews.
She's a helpless moron. The kid's mom is like just the whiny crier in every opportunity.
It's like I felt like whoever made this movie really didn't like women.
It's
because
Trevorrow.
But it was so insulting to their whole gender because it was just like, look, this woman is she's a boss. She's making it in her job. She's top in her career. Yet she's horrible at it. She's an idiot. She's completely inept at everything she seems to do, and she's running in freaking high heels from the dinosaur that's chasing her. And all of these things where you're just like, oh my God, it was literally, I just felt like I was watching James Bond, you know, with Sean Connery. And he's like, you know, I'm going to slap you so you can stop being silly.
I enjoyed it. I liked watching Jurassic World. It was fun. It's what I wanted in a Jurassic World remake. There's going to be a sequel. I'm excited for it. And the guy who's directing is J.A. Bayona, who's directed four movies with Guillermo del Toro, so I'm excited for that. I mean, it's hard to compare, like, go from Spielberg. Spielberg just makes amazing movies when it comes to any movie. So when you're taking the reins from him, it's very difficult. And people want to use their own, like, impact or style. But as far as the story and the whole movie goes, I had a good time with it. Like, I'm not looking into it as far as I guess I was just entertained by it. I really like its silliness of it all. Like, two dinosaurs tipped their hats to each other. Like, they acknowledged each other, and they did, like, with the two fingers, twirl it around and bowed, like, our job is done, and left. That happens in the movie.
Yes.
And see, like, I have no problem with silly, but that movie crossed straight from silly into stupid.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm going to tell you how I feel about the movie.
Okay, Jurassic World.
I think the movie got by on two things alone. It got by on Chris Pratt and his incredible likability, and it got by on the premise. The whole movie is based on the premise of, how can we make this one more exciting? We'll just make it more extreme. That's basically what they did with everything. Like, okay, the T-Rex is really scary. Let's make it more extreme. The velociraptors were cool and dangerous. Let's make them super velociraptors that are on the side of the good guys and get to run alongside with the motorcycle and do fun motorcycle action stuff. And I feel like everything was just along those lines. Like, well, let's have a cool sea monster. Let's have a gigantic, extreme sea monster eat another sea monster, and it's going to be so good. It's going to be extreme.
Well, okay, so there's that aspect, but I also think we finally saw what actual Jurassic Park was supposed to be. It was up and running. It was a theme park. And then all hell broke
loose. I mean,
so you have all that stuff.
Well, but the problem is that the what made Jurassic Park work was a handful of things. It was good writing. It was likable characters. It was empowered chicks, because the women that were in the original Jurassic Park were amazing.
Awesome, yeah.
And they were such fantastic characters that were just truly equals. You know what I mean? In fact, some cases, they were the smartest people in the movie. And then what we also had was a fantastic score by John Williams.
Exactly.
And that was a gigantic, gaping hole in this movie.
They still had it. It was still a decent score.
It was part of the score.
That was not originally composed by John Williams.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't.
Because there's nothing memorable.
Yeah.
It's just completely throwaway. It could have been anything, and it could have been the score from the last Avengers movie. It doesn't matter.
You wouldn't have known.
Yeah, it's just freaking music.
Agreed. But they do add some of the John Williams type stuff in there.
They use some of his lines.
But to the argument of everything's extreme, I think that's part of like what they were trying to say was the corporate greed and humans wanting to make everything faster and stronger and better for more attraction.
But that's all the movie was, though. Is that there was that's literally what they? I feel like they were making fun of the audience in the movie.
Well, I think they go because they want sequels that are stronger, better, faster.
This movie is like the Key and Peele skit for Gremlins 2.
It's exactly what it's like.
Which is an excellent skit.
It's a great skit. This movie is a perfect example of exactly that.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I love Gremlins 2. I love him.
I know you do.
It makes so much sense when we're talking about these movies. So, and because everything that you said you loved about the movie are reasons why I hated it. Except for that one scene where the chick was getting eaten by the pterodactyl or whatever it was. But everything else, like the bowing, I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe this is, like, is this really in this movie?
Yeah, this is actually happening.
Like I'm watching a spoof of Jurassic Park, not actual Jurassic Park in the sequel.
And to you, good sir.
Hello. Because the thing was, like, velociraptors were by far the scariest thing of the original Jurassic Park. They were brutal killing machines, untamable. And then here you go, and they're like pets, right?
Well, because they've had so much time to work with them. And
but you still don't take a rattlesnake. I mean, go train a rattlesnake to be a good pet.
Yeah, but raptors are way smarter than rattlesnakes.
But it takes generations to outbreed those kinds of behavioral traits.
Three generations.
Okay. You don't train a wolf into a chihuahua in three generations, man.
I would like you to take everything you have said about this movie and why it's good, and now imagine they did it with Jaws. And then sit here and tell me you would think that's a great movie. You have sharks, which are these awesome giant predators, and now they're on a team of sharks fighting for the good guys!
Hey, the first Jaws was excellent, but if you're talking about Jaws 2, 3, or 4, they're all really bad.
No, I want you to take the premise of Jurassic World and just fucking put your Jaws sharks in it.
Didn't they do that? Didn't they do that with Deep Blue Sea or something like that?
You like that movie?
Who doesn't like Deep Blue Sea? They had like the team of sharks and go around and they turned back.
It was just another example of just a really poorly and haphazardly written movie where the guys, I feel like they were just shooting off ideas and it was just like, well, let's just do that. What are we going to do? Just make her run away from the thing. You know what I mean? Like, well, we're going to shoot it. Is she going to be like wearing a different outfit or something? Nah, just put her in high heels. It's fine. Nobody cares.
But
why is she going to get in this perilous situation? She does the dumb thing. Because she's a woman with a tiny woman brain, I guess. You know what I mean? I feel like that's the decisions that they were making in this movie when they were creating it.
I don't know. I enjoyed them both.
I feel like it's just a lot of crazy coke-fueled spitballing.
Hey,
perfect, actually.
When you have Alien, a franchise like that, and you have Jurassic Park franchise like that, you're going to have studio interference to make everybody...
All right, guys, so we got to make a way to make the Velociraptors run alongside a motorcycle. I need you to work that in the movie. I want a motorcycle and Velociraptors together.
You know what would be really cool? You know what? Everybody likes Chris Pratt. Everybody likes Velociraptors. Let's put them together.
Yeah.
Let's make them friends.
Chris Pratt and Velociraptors are going to be best friends in this movie.
Let's hang out, drinking Coca-Cola, and eating marshmallows.
Yep.
I'm excited for the next Jurassic World.
You said that.
I am. I'm excited.
We know. And we're looking forward to doing this podcast again with that next movie.
Exactly.
I like this.
Because we have a feeling it will probably be the exact same thing.
What other movies do we
Well, we just brought up one.
With the next one where it's going to be the Gremlins fucking 2? The Megasaurus Rex.
Yeah.
Because that's what you got coming.
Gremlins 2?
I hope they do a Megasaurus Rex just so I can call Jeremy that for the rest of his life.
You can call me that. You can call me that anyway. You don't need a movie.
Oh, you're welcome.
We were discussing, you said that both of these movies, one of the reasons why you feel they're good movies, because they've got a good score on Rotten Tomatoes. That was one of your
No,
as
I'm just
part of
that
your
both,
argument.
No. I'm just saying that they both have good scores on Rotten Tomatoes.
That was part of
like,
your argument to prove us wrong.
That's rare for movies like that, I think. Because most people in the critic community, when it comes to reboots and remakes like this, don't really like them. But these two are fresh, like almost sitting at 80% here.
These two paid the reviewers.
No,
they cared
they
enough.
Don't do that.
They cared
don't do
enough.
That.
So I know they do that because I've seen Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, and I've read the reviews. And they were not the reviews for the same movie that I watched.
I'm pretty sure I reviewed Ghost Protocol, and I really want to look that up. So,
this is what you mentioned. You said those movies have good scores on Rotten Tomatoes, and Jeremy and I both immediately, that when we think about how untrustable Rotten Tomatoes is, we both come back to the same movie because we probably
make the Rotten Tomatoes joke about Ghost Protocol to each other once a week.
Yeah, exactly. Anytime we talk about Rotten Tomatoes, it's the same joke because we both were like, hey, let's go see this new Mission Impossible movie. It's got 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's a damn high rating. And then
they gave it 119.
And it was by no means a good movie. It was by certainly no means an almost perfect score.
All right, I see my Rogue Nation.
We're going to fight spy crimes with iPhones. And everything's going to break one thing after another.
Where's Ghost Protocol? I can't find it.
The internet auto-deleted it.
Rogue Nation. So Ghost Protocol, that's the one where he like descends the Dubai building, right?
I don't remember. It was such a vanilla movie that I don't even remember anything about it, except for the fact that I was really disappointed.
He's like, he's gone rogue and he's everyone's enemy, but wait, that's like half of the six
rogue
movies.
Mission.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of it. It's an impossible mission.
That's not part of it. You can't use the same plot for every movie.
It's like when 24 did that every season. Everybody doesn't believe Jack Bauer saves the day.
But that's
day.
Not the premise of the movie. The premise is that he's a freaking secret agent doing secret agent stuff.
That's true.
That's the premise.
But
it's not every premise is he's going to go rogue.
Baldwin accepts him as, like, they're one of them. Oh, that's what I think. I need to find my review. But I like those. I don't like part two, Mission Impossible 2, with John Woo, with the birds and the slow motion, the whole movie. I didn't like it. I like the first one. J.J. Abrams one with Philip Seymour Hoffman, because Philip Seymour Hoffman was a badass villain in that
Agreed.
One. Ghost Protocol was fun, and Rogue Nation was fun, just because they're, like, the same movie. As well as The Mummy. Mission Impossible, The Mummy. Same movie.
I do not agree with you on The Mummy. I hated The Mummy.
No, I'm not saying that I didn't like the movie. I say it's like Mission Impossible. Tom Cruise does pretty much the same shit now.
Well, I mean, they're empty, vanilla, blah movies. Okay. They're movies that you watch and you're like, okay, that was a movie.
Which is sad because Tom Cruise is actually a really good actor.
He can be very good. But I'm just going to say, I'm not going to sit here and say that Ghost Protocol was horrible. But by no means did it deserve an almost perfect rating. That movie, at best, I would give that movie a 5 out of 10.
Hold on.
It's just one of those movies where I'm like, okay, I watched it. I'm not going to go tell anyone. I felt the same way when I watched The Mummy. Like, maybe I'd give it a 5.5 out of 10.
Ghost Protocol 2011. So, yeah, I might have not reviewed that because I was right at the beginning.
93%.
Look at that. Everybody
and that's like the same rating as just the best movies you can think of. I bet Raiders of the Lost Ark has a similar rating. I bet that Temple of Doom has a lower rating.
The film clanks along on square wheel. That's what somebody wrote.
About
Yeah, one
Ghost
of the critics
Protocol.
Didn't like it, yeah. That is the fourth. It doesn't matter. It's different for everybody. That's why criticism.
But the average score was high enough to give it a 93%,
which is crazy for Ghost Protocol. Like that's an abnormally high rating.
That is a bogusly high rating. It is absolutely misleading. Like if they had given that movie a 70%, I'd have been like, okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was about to give 70%. I was like sitting there, 60%, 70%.
Like, I can't believe this is higher rated than Godfather 2. This is ridiculous.
Like, okay, this is getting the same rating as, like, Captain Fantastic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you've got, like, this amazing piece of art,
yeah,
and you've got this, like, Hollywood AAA turd, basically. It's, like, not the same ballpark, man.
Which, you know what? Because I guess it was it a long time between 3 and 4? I can't. No, it was a long time between 2. I can't. I'm trying to remember. But, no, I get your point. And with Mission Impossible movies, I know it's going to be the same exact thing.
I feel like everyone's going to be listening to this podcast going, why the hell are we talking so much about Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol? This movie came out a long time ago and nobody cared.
2011, it's 93% rating. Hardcore. I mean, we're an hour and a half, 94 minutes in the podcast, and I'm very excited, and we're not going to stop right now, because I have to bring up
we're
another
gonna
movie.
We're going
to
split this into two episodes.
No, we're not. No, we're not.
This is just going to be the giant wedding
the
episode.
The marathon episode.
So, I got to say, I doubt y'all have seen this movie yet, but I really, really want to give you two homework and actually go see this movie. A movie called Mother.
I am completely ready to go see it.
Yep. Okay. So, lowercase O-T-H-E-R,
exclamation
point. We don't know what it's trying to say. I saw this movie, and it is on CineScore right now.
I never really liked it.
On CineScore, it has a 0.0 rating, which is crazy to me because...
You're thinking it's the other end of the spectrum here.
No. So, my review, it's so hard to describe this movie to people, because it, when you get out of it, you're just like, whoa, what's going on? Because it's a bad movie, and it's a good movie all in the same time, and there are maybe 20 things you might get from it as far as, like, what he was trying to say or what he wasn't trying to say, but I can tell you it is really messed up. Completely. So, like, so Mother, how it, I guess, to not give anything away, it's... Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem, their characters are called Mother and Him. No character names in the movie whatsoever. It's these two that live together in, like, you know, a really old Victorian house that they're fixing up in the middle of nowhere. And then just one thing happens after the other. It's really creepy. So it's kind of... It's never slow, but it plays out like a slow type of Shining type of scenario until, like, the last 20, 30 minutes when it just is, like... I think in my review, I put it, like... It's the first 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan, but instead of storming the beaches of Normandy, it's in hell. And it, like, in a split second, and it's like, I have a film critic friend who, like, ran out of the theater because of some of the things they did.
Really?
Like, it's crazy.
So, I know you. You have a taste for the...
Depravity.
For the really awful things in movies. For some hardcore depraved stuff. And did you find it to be... intense.
Oh, yeah.
So it was gore and disturbing things that actually made you feel uncomfortable?
Oh, yeah. No, no.
That says a lot.
No, it does say a lot. This is somebody who watches Human Centipede on a dime.
Yeah, I know. Because I've watched movies with you that are just like, what was the movie? Dead Alive. And we're just having a great time laughing and enjoying ourselves. Now, that movie's not super serious, but... I know there are things that you've been trying to talk me into watching that I'm like, no, I'm not going to watch that. And I love a good gory movie. I really do.
So I wouldn't say this is a... I mean, okay, so there is gore in it. But the things that happen in this movie you've never seen... I think in my final word of my review said you've never seen anything like it. And you haven't.
Yeah.
Because they... The balls... The balls on the studio to have this wide release and to have Darren Aronofsky make this is insane. Like, when you see this, you're like, movie studio? They released this?
I'm sold, man. As soon as, like, I remember I saw the preview just the other week when I went and saw It. They had the preview, the big trailer for it, and it was basically saying, you'll never forget where you were when you watched Mother. That was kind of one of their selling points of it.
I don't know. It's a weird way to say it, because when you compare that to, like, 9/11 or, like, JFK being shot.
Well, they're like, you know, it's like the first time you saw The Exorcist or something along with that.
Yeah,
you always like,
this will be ingrained in your brain for a long time. And, like, after you get out of the movie, you will literally, you will be in, like, a state of... of like limbo, basically. Like, I have no idea what's going on. I'm like, what do we make of this? I got to sleep on this for a couple days.
Did you have to watch Seinfeld afterwards?
No, because it's not like a scary movie like
okay,
that.
Okay, so it wasn't that level of disturbing.
No, no, I mean, no, it is very disturbing, but it's like think, it's also tons. So, Darren Aronofsky, who's known for making, like, Requiem for a Dream, and Black Swan, and The Wrestler, and Pi,
Fountain.
The Fountain, none of his movies are happy. This one definitely isn't. How it's made, like, there's been so many people on Reddit, at least, that's been, like, trying to tell, like, what this about, and there's a lot of really good theories on it, which a lot of people can draw their own conclusions. It's what it is.
That's what the great thing about Aronofsky's movies are. I mean, yeah. People are still talking about The Fountain, like what it means,
well,
you know?
Well, some of his, most of his movies follow kind of a narrative, and this really doesn't. It's weird like that, but if I can compare it, I compare it to The Shining, Rosemary's Baby,
and these are
Carrie.
Some of my favorite movies. I love The Shining, and I love Rosemary's
but
Baby.
Oh, I can't wait for you to see it, because I really want you to know, y'all should do a double feature of Kingsman and Mother on Friday. Just watch Mother
I'm
second.
So excited to see Mother. I really want to see that
actually,
one.
Actually, I'm trying to think. You should probably watch Mother first. I don't know how to do that, because one's like extremely fun, and the other one's extremely...
It might be good to have a palate cleanser afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously, like, clear your mind of ridiculous. But it's like, you actually might like Kingsman 2 better. After seeing Mother, you're like, I needed to process.
Just give me a lifeboat.
And after seeing somebody like Josie see Mother.
Oh, I don't think she could hang.
Well, it's not like horror. It's not going to scare you. It's just, it's so crazy of what happens. Like, for most of the movie, they'll be fine. Because it's kind of a slow burn. But those last 20 minutes, it's like things happen and you're like, you don't have time to process. And one fucked up thing trumps the next fucked up thing every 10 seconds. And you're like, oh, God. And then just like, things will happen. And like just getting thinking about it gives me chills. And uh-huh. I was like, oh, man, it's insane. Don't read any spoilers. Don't do anything.
No, I'm not. I've been avoiding spoilers like the plague for this movie.
Because I tried not to give spoilers in the review at all, just like kind of like a general outline of what kind of happens, minus, you know, the last 20 minutes. So I'm curious to what y'all think, and I hope y'all see it this week.
I am 1,000,000% down to watch it.
Yeah, but it's one of those movies where like 50 like it.
I love seeing shocking films, just because I like talking about it with people.
Specifically since it got a wide release, and of course it made tons of money second weekend. This
yeah.
one only made like $7 million.
Yeah.
And after this movie, Jennifer Lawrence has said that she's taking a break from acting for 2 years.
I think everyone's probably okay with that.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Except for X-Men movies.
So yeah, Mother, I can't wait. I hope y'all see it, and I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. Because thinking about it again, I want to watch it again. Just I like to watch people watch it, you know. Like
yeah.
You get a camera, and you're like, "This is coming up. I wonder what's going to happen." And then just yeah, crazy.
Right on.
Well, good. Well, anything else you want to add? We're almost 2 hours in.
I think now is probably a good stopping point.
That's a good stopping point. All right.
Let's just leave it on while we play Destiny.
So we are Mediocrity. Find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio under the Multimedia Men banner. We are there, and very special episode because we're all three together this week. And hopefully we can do this again when we all go out to L.A. or you come back to Texas or something like that.
I'm sure we will.
And congratulations to Jeremy and Josie.
Thank you.
And we might have to have a podcast with all four of us on, including Josie. Hear about your world.
I imagine we'll be taking a break next week because this guy's going to be at Disneyland.
Disneyland. Mm-hmm. We have to make him. We have to get him on from the hotel room or something like that. Hey man, can you take an hour from your honeymoon and talk about The Rock, please? No, man. That'd be fun. But no, congratulations. Real happy for you and glad we can all be here together. To our fans for listening to us, which I guess according to Jeremy is only one person.
No, I know there's at least two people.
There's at least two people. Okay. And I want to give a shout out to, before we leave, one of our listeners, Mitchell Blumka, who's been with us since almost the beginning.
Well, it was three people. There's at least three people
yeah.
now.
He wanted to say that he loved the last podcast, and he wants a remake with Kevin Hart and The Rock of The Emperor's New Groove. Kevin Hart as The Emperor and The Rock as Kronk.
Sign me up.
Thank you, Mitch. And that is our podcast, Mediocrity. Thank you for listening.